The Pro Wrestling Stories Podcast.
Welcome to the Pro Wrestling Stories Podcast, where we transport you to nostalgic moments of wrestling's past. You can listen to the show on Apple, Spotify, Google, YouTube, or wherever you get them, and follow Pro Wrestling Stories on Facebook at Pro Wrestling Stories and on Twitter, PWS_official. Plus, if you're looking to add some swag to your collection, specifically a t-shirt, stop by PWSTees.com. And of course, look for all the t-shirts on there. Select the one that you want the most. And as an exclusive for you, take an additional 10% off your order using the promo code PODCAST. Plus, we have some more. It's like, but wait, there's more. Yes. If you leave us a podcast review, if we've earned it, 5 stars, of course, on Apple Podcasts or any other streaming platform, you will be entered to win any t-shirt of your choosing on PWSTees.com. I'm Chris Toplak. He's Corey Rivard. And when dealing with a backstage altercation, a sign of disrespect, or someone who decided to break the unwritten code of the locker room, what are the best means of prosecution? Two words: wrestler's court. Corey, when was the first time you heard about the infamous wrestler's court?
Oh, Chris, these people are idiots. But in general, you always heard that the Undertaker had all this respectful authority in the back, and perhaps I didn't always know to what extent and ridiculous wavelengths that may have lied on. I always knew that the Undertaker was the guy that people turned to in the back. I didn't know it was in this big old kangaroo court situation.
Yeah,
which is completely insane and ridiculous, and we'll tell you all about it.
Oh, yeah. So Wrestler's Court was first started by Dutch Mantel, and this was years ago, and this was really as a way for the boys to settle their differences backstage. Now, he brought in the concept soon after the murder of Bruiser Brody, and that makes a lot of sense because, of course, he was present at the arena during the stabbing, and he did not want another backstage altercation to take place and also escalate to that level. And as you noted, who served as the judge? It was naturally only one man, The Undertaker. And, of course, an individual, as we know, who commands so much respect. But there were some other individuals that actually used to fill in for him, most notably JBL and Triple H. So what they say is Wrestler's Court maintains order behind the scenes and acts as a check and balance system to show that no one is above the law. I don't know why I think of Steven Seagal when I read that.
I'll always think of Steven Seagal as often as possible.
So I'll paint this picture for you. We know Undertaker is the judge. There were some attorneys there, as well as defense attorneys who backed up the accused. Punishments were usually on the lighter side of things. The guilty party would usually settle ordeals through gifting bottles of JD, Jack Daniels. Of course, that was naturally to The Undertaker, who loved it. Cases of beer or food. Although unpopular figures backstage have been on the receiving end of much harsher justice in Wrestler's Court. And also, if you stick around until the very tail end, I will mention a few that were not shared in this story. So if you want to follow along with us, it's Tales from WWE's Wrestler's Court. The author is Braden Farrell, editor J.P. Sarka. And it's only fitting, I believe it's best practice, because they mentioned this, that we celebrate with some alcoholic beverages. What are you sipping on, my friend?
I've got the stiffest vodka ever here. I started pouring it and I thought the bottle was empty. It was pretty full, actually, so it's pretty stiff. I've got it in my Captain Kirk glass. It says set phasers on stun, and I need to be stunned for this, because good God, we're about to deal with a bunch of immature children.
It's ridiculous.
For about an hour here. Yeah.
Yeah. So it is
big
the best
vodka.
Practice.
How about you?
I am sipping on a hometown Helles lager. This is courtesy of Rusty Wrench Brewing Company in Strathroy, Ontario. Golden, smooth, crisp, slight bitterness, very much inspired by a Munich-style lager, similar to Oktoberfest. So I love this one. I'm going to open it right now. I have a couple nearby, just in case. There we go.
Buddy, cheers. I haven't had a sip yet. We ready to go?
Yeah, we are. Go for it.
Cheers. Cheers to these bozos to Wrestler's Court.
The immaturity.
I'm set for this cacophony.
This is delicious. I wish I could hand you this one. I think you would really enjoy it.
I wish you could too. I didn't venture out to the beer store, so this stiff nastiness is going to have to do it. That's okay. By the end, we'll both be in the same hectic heap.
If we receive enough downloads, maybe we'll take the show on the road at some point on the Lex Express.
Hell yeah, we will. Hell yeah, that's sponsored by whatever beers you shout out and love, and that sounds like a time.
So let the immaturity begin, Corey. I don't envy you with starting off on this first story. When we put this together, we were both shaking our heads. This is just so ludicrous, most of it.
Matt Stryker in wrestler's court for a misinterpreted comment.
Of course.
Adults. Matt Stryker was a misunderstood individual when he arrived on the scene in WWE. Stryker has gone on record saying that he isn't great socially, especially when talking to people he doesn't know well. And that he was a bit of a loner in WWE.
He was a commentator. That doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
That's true. What a great job to give that guy right off the hop. Guy who can't talk. This rubbed a lot of the locker room the wrong way, and as a result, he was perceived as cocky and obnoxious. Mm-hmm. Stryker made a statement which, in the eyes of the locker room, put SmackDown in a negative light when in comparison to Raw. This, along with the general feeling of the locker room being against him, landed him in
Wrestler's Court.
A bad comment got him there. Matters reached their peak in a hotel lobby one night. JBL was, you guessed it, intoxicated and bugging Matt Stryker to come down from his room to talk in the lobby.
Talk.
Yeah. In an RF video shoot interview, Stryker spoke about why he may have had heat with the boys and recounts what happened once he met JBL in the lobby.
Oh, geez.
And I quote, "I suck socially. I have nothing to talk about. I didn't want to sit around and commiserate with all the people there. Johnny Parisi and I..." Make him a commentator. That makes sense.
I know, that's
Johnny
amazing.
Parisi and I were kind of cool with one another, and I knew a few of the guys from the indies in WWE, but I was really always kind of by myself, and I think people took that to be that I was cocky. It wasn't. It was just because I was so damn fucking weird. And then Tommy Dreamer and Edge became my friends, and I became quasi-normal.
Makes no sense. So it's like you're a performer, you're a commentator, and you consider yourself to be this absolute outcast who can't interact with people.
You know, you could be a banker or something. This is an option. There's lots of stuff to do where it's you don't have to be on television every day.
It's like being a police officer who's a scaredy cat. Like, okay, just get enough courage and go up to the car. Okay, you got to give them a speeding ticket. Okay, I can do it.
I can't even picture this guy as a teacher, which was his other job, real job, right?
It was.
How do you talk? Can't talk in front of crowds, this guy. Anyways, okay, some things I said were misinterpreted. The original plan was for me to be on both Raw and SmackDown during the time of the brand split and to do commentary for both shows and to be this wise-ass, heelish, teachery kind of guy. And I had gone from Raw to SmackDown, and I had made the comment that it was kind of like going from college to high school. I didn't mean it based on the maturity. I meant it based on how relaxed it was.
Okay.
Kind of fair.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, in college, Raw, you know, I got to study and I got to go to study all night and I can't hang out. And in high school, SmackDown, it's like, hey, man, let's smoke a joint, throw the things around, and then we'll go to Mrs. Jones's class and ditch and eight period and yada, yada, yada. And that's what I meant. But this was during a time and a climate where a lot of the veterans were adamant about letting the younger guys understand what the business was about. And was misunderstood and mistaken. And that next day, I got the TV. No one would talk to me. People turned away. I was like, what the fuck's going on? Some of the guys said, hey, I heard you said that it's like high school here. And well, once that train got going, perception became reality. The person at the center of the situation, Chris Benoit. Mm-hmm. Chris Benoit in Reno, Nevada. Everyone was down at the bar, and he was very close to me, reading me the riot act in front of everyone. I mean, fucking screaming at me, and I was just standing there going, holy shit. There was a gift shop that stayed open, and Chris went to the gift shop, and he said, come with me.
I want to buy you a gift.
Yeah, of course. Now's the time. It was just me and him. I'm thinking, fuck, Chris Benoit, he's going to eat my face. But then all of a sudden, he closed the door, and he said, listen, I've got to make an example out of you. Since I think it's great that you left teaching to come here, it shows passion for the business. But I need to make an example out of you for all of them. So when we're in front of everybody, I'm going to lay into you. But I promise you, I'm going to help you. So what most people saw was Chris being hard on me. What they didn't see was that he would call and text me all the time, asking if I wanted to work out or that he would watch my matches, but would only pull me aside when it was just him, because I had to be the example.
Hmm.
And I'll also never forget that Chris said to me, listen, I need to set an example. You have to earn your way into the locker room. And that's what we're really trying to do here, okay? So for right now, you can't change in the locker room. I remember at one live event, I was changing in a janitor's closet, and I went back into my bag. My money was gone. I went to Chris, and I say, hey, listen, I think the janitor did it. I don't know. And Chris would say, oh, fuck, you got your money stolen? I'll give you the money. What else? And that showed you what kind of guy he was underneath it all.
Okay, so this appears to be an example of something clearly blown out of proportion here, right? I mean, and I know it's very difficult to separate Chris Benoit here from the Chris Benoit from the final days of his life, but I'm just looking at this story, and in this moment, he does seem to be providing Matt with some support and guidance, which is nice and refreshing to see.
It does sound like a little tiny, like some water wings in the middle of the ocean. Though. Like, okay, here's this little minor help I'll give you, but like, not all of this is insanity.
It is. It's theatrical, too, of like, I hate you. You got to do this. Hey, by the way, are you okay? Are you okay? Do you need money? Do you want to work out?
Exactly. This is why this is why scripting for these shows is ridiculous. These people are drama queens, anyways. They'll cause their own storylines to happen.
Absolutely. And it gets worse from there with Matt Stryker. He has, of course, the JBL confrontation. Now, keep in mind, depending on who you ask, most of them, by the way, he didn't always have a stellar reputation in the locker room either, Mr. JBL. He's respected, but many have claimed that he's a bully. We covered that in depth already. So here's what he had to say. We were in Europe, and I was dating a diva at the time. He does not say who, for the record. She was the only diva I ever dated. And we were in the room sleeping, and my phone rang. It was one of the Bashams. It was almost like a whispering, don't go downstairs. JBL's drinking, and he's looking for you. Of course, yes, the operative word, drinking. Don't come downstairs. Phone rings again, and it's Basham. JBL wants you downstairs, Stryker. You told me not to go downstairs, Basham. Yeah, I know. Now, by the way, the Bashams were billed as twins. They did not even friggin' look like twins. They just both had shaved heads. That was literally it.
Yeah, no, that's all you needed for a gimmick back then.
Shave their heads and make them twins.
What's funny, I found a playlist on YouTube that's curated by WWE called Boring Tag Teams, and the Bashams are on it. I stared at it for 12 minutes. Okay, this is WWE actually released this, and it's about how boring the Bashams are and other tag teams, but one of them is them.
Well, the Bashams were incredibly forgettable, and obviously WWE agrees with that.
Yeah, sounds like it.
So continuing, here's what Matt Stryker had to say. I'm lying there, and the girl is lying there next to me, and she's like, what are you going to do? And it's like, you know what? I've gotten my ass kicked plenty of times in life. Fuck it. Let me go downstairs. I went downstairs, and JBL was sitting there holding wrestler's court, drinking. I don't actually think he was holding wrestler's court, but nevertheless.
Yeah, not wrestler's court. Yeah.
And all his minions were around him, and I just calmly sat down, and I said, I heard you wanted to talk to me. Before he, JBL, started saying anything, the girl I was dating came down. She walked in, and I'm thinking, you're going to get me fucking killed here. So she said in front of everybody, if you're going to go through with this, you're going to have to go through with this with me, basically. So she's going to go through it with him. I appreciate that.
What a gal.
I could probably guess, but I don't want to.
I
want to
hear your guess. No, you don't. Okay.
I'll leave it off air because I don't want them to tune in and be like, Chris, that son of a bitch. So I'm not going
to
do
I'll get him to chug his drink. Reveal all by the end.
But either way, Matt, of course, thought this was awesome. We both agree. And Bradshaw was drinking and he was going on and on and on. And you know those what chants? You can actually insert them in here. The big thing was JBL would say, are you a piece of shit? Stryker would say, what? No, I'm not. What? JBL, oh, I'm a liar then. What? No, you're not. Oh, so you're a piece of shit then. What? No, I'm not. And so on and so forth. So I'm a liar then. It, very, very immature, obviously. And it went on and on like this. And basically, Matt kept giving the same answer. And then finally, JBL says something along the lines of, oh, you think you're big or whatever because you're dating some piece of ass diva, which I think is totally out of line. I don't know why he would say that.
Is.
And then Matt says, I was like, John, with all due respect, this has nothing to do with her, which, you know, credit to Matt, that is true. JBL responded, well, yeah, I'll kick your ass right now. Where's the context of this? So
what a sweetheart.
Yeah. And then Matt, he says that I thought to myself, okay, here's what I came down here for. This is the lumps. Beat me up. I'll go back to my room and everything will be fine. So I didn't realize he didn't get up. JBL remained seated. But he actually stood up, being Matt Stryker. So I looked like I was the one that was itching to fight. And in my head, I thought, okay, you're 6'9", you're the toughest Texan in town. Of course you should kick my ass. But if I get one lucky punch or you slip and fall, I'm king of the world. And he did not get up. And he does not know, being Matt Stryker, if he was just too drunk or if he didn't want to get hurt or if he didn't want to hurt Matt Stryker. But either way, he thought that JBL would kill him. He did not get up. And right there, in that moment, when everyone was looking around like he was starting to fight and he wasn't, he just sat up. JBL said, "You're not fucking worth it." So Matt Stryker stood up to JBL, and apparently things went smoother for him right after that.
I remember that happening in recess, actually, in second grade. So, yeah, I could totally relate to this story.
It's a bizarre story, though.
Like, JBL, I mean, constantly with this garbage all the time.
Just going back and forth. Like, even the, "Are you a piece of shit?" "No, I'm not." "Oh, I'm a liar then." "Oh, no, you're not." Like, what is this? And, of course, the minion sitting by, like, wouldn't you just get involved and say, "That's enough. Let him go."
Yeah. How long does it take you to learn that I'm going to beat you up is the stupidest response to anything imaginable. Why?
Well, imagine if you're Matt Stryker. Here's what I would say. I don't know if he was on commentary at this point, but I'd say I'd just bury you in commentary.
That's a good point, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, that probably would have buried his career pretty
fast. Sure, probably. But
he did that on his own eventually.
Subtle jabs would be nice on commentary. Yeah, JBL looks a little bit out of shape. Maybe he should hit the gym. It's like, whoa.
Yeah. Sounds like he won this round anyway. So, here's my favorite part of the whole article.
Oh, geez.
And I know yours, too.
Oh, I hate it.
The next part of the article goes, "The entire Divas roster find themselves in wrestler's court for making things embarrassing for the business."
Hmm.
"In one of the oddest wrestler court cases, the entire Divas roster teamed up in a dodgeball match against rookie Diva Search contestants at SummerSlam 2004, and the Divas lost convincingly. The dodgeball match was thought to have been a shoot by the men backstage, and needless to say, they weren't happy about how the women fared."
Really? I mean, I'm going to steal a line from The Miz, but I was thinking when you hear the title of that article, it's going to be something really embarrassing. It's a fucking dodgeball match. Who cares?
A dodgeball match?
Jeez.
Why would anyone care?
By the way,
why would anyone put a second thought into that?
This was the SummerSlam that took place at formerly known, now Scotiabank Arena, Air Canada Center in Toronto. Randy Orton defeated Chris Benoit to become the youngest world heavyweight champion at 24. And I'm not going to say more importantly, but I watched this. You watched this too. It's painful. I flipped it off in 30 seconds and said, this is way too silly for me. The Diva Search contestants were Christy Hemme, Michelle McCool, who she had probably the best career easily out of all of them. Maria Kanellis, Joy, Amy, Tracy were essentially forgotten. Team Diva, as they called it, Trish Stratus, Molly Holly, Jazz, Stacey Keibler, she's got some length there for the throwing the dodgeball, Gail Kim, Nedia, and Victoria. So actually a pretty reputable team. But as I said, I ultimately tapped out in 30 seconds and thought, this is the silliest shit I've ever seen.
Well, I put in the hard work, Chris. I watched it 3 times to make sure I had every angle analyzed. I wanted to make sure that when they hit, when the ref called, that they hit the girl's visor, that it actually made contact with the visor, and she was worthy of being kicked out. And it was one of the greatest matches I've ever seen. No one's going to remember that Benoit, Randy Orton bullshit. This is what it's all about. "The perception was that the woman on the roster lost to models with zero wrestling experience or much athletic background at all, and that it was embarrassing for the business." Well, it's dodgeball. What do they expect? This was one of the very rare occasions where the Undertaker was not the judge. Triple H was instead, which may be an indication of how silly this case really was. Ivory was there in defense for the woman. Recent Hall of Famer Ivory had this to say about the experience in wrestler's court on kayfabe commentaries. "So we had a wrestler's court. The Divas got brought to court on the charges that they lost legitimately in dodgeball on a pay-per-view against the new Divas, the Bikini Girls, the Diva Search contestants. So the wrestlers thought that this was just horrible and a real admonishment to women as athletes, and they made a big deal out of it. So Molly Holly came to me and she said, 'We need a defense attorney. Will you be our attorney?' And I said, 'Sure, yeah, I'd love to. What's the deal? What's the charge? What's happening?' So they filled me in, and they had an actual defense they wanted me to pitch. So the funny thing, though, was that Triple H decided he was going to be the judge, and of course, that's always Undertaker's role. That right there set a precedent of it being like Judge Judy, you know, it's the TV version of Wrestler's Court, plus what a stupid trumped-up charge. it was just silly. It was kind of like, I don't know why the cameras weren't in there. I wish they were, though, because it was one of the highlights of my career. Appropriately enough, Sean Morley, a.k.a. Val Venus, was the prosecuting attorney, and I was the defense attorney for the Divas, Real Athletic Divas, and Triple H was the court, the judge. So our argument was, because it's wrestling, it was a work. We had to let them win. Of course, the guys weren't having it. They weren't going to accept that. Neither will I. I watched it four times. It was a genuine win. So we got kind of a bum deal. I did a very dramatic super performance as a defense attorney. I ripped my jacket off at one point, and I got to shut Coachman down. It was awesome. Coachman said something, and I said, why are you even in wrestler's court? You're not a wrestler. You don't even belong here.
I don't know why I had the Seinfeld music stuck in my head there. So,
well, you know that law show Seinfeld. It's appropriate. Do you know the L.A. Law or any of the other ones? Any of the other theme songs?
I know a bunch. I had to judge it. For Judge Judy. But it's just, yeah, this is just so bizarre.
Kicking in, guys.
Oh, God. Yeah. And the fact, too, that she says this is one of the highlights of my career. Don't sell yourself short, Ivory. You were former women's champion, for God's sakes.
Yeah, yikes. I can't believe we're talking about this. Okay, so Ivory proceeded to say the prosecutors had the bimbo divas up there, you know, to answer questions, and they didn't even know what a squared circle was. We gave them questions about wrestling. They had no idea what was going on. So I think we would have won, but the guys had it for a ruse. They didn't want us to win. So then came the time to bribe the judge. Normally, the accused would bring in a case of beer, something for the judge, and that has always worked to lighten the sentence, right? Well, what I did was I packaged up a gift certificate to the Red Roof Inn, and we offered that to Triple H. As everybody knows, Triple H always stayed and had been staying for years at the TV hotels, which is a nice hotel, and he would never, ever use a gift certificate to the Red Roof Inn. So I presented it to him in a really humble way, and the whole room just, like, fell out. They were just totally digging it. It was really good. What a highlight in wrestling history.
Jeez.
And she says the best part was shutting Coachman down. And do we wish there were cameras there? Do we wish we saw that, Chris?
No, not at all.
No. I'm so thankful, as a matter of fact, that we didn't see that.
Is one of those situations where you had to have been there to appreciate it, because you hear about it and you think, I don't understand why this is so hilarious.
Yeah, they could have only been this. This must have only been to lighten the mood in their general lives, because to drag out anything further from that absolutely useless dodgeball match that was on a pay-per-view event is absolutely ridiculous. These people.
And also, how about the fact too? Why not put the women on the show in actual matches? Just me.
Yeah, that's like what 10 people that they could have just had a whatever. Didn't have to be a big match.
No,
why
kidding.
What was this? Why dodgeball?
Not know. I'm surprised it wasn't a food fight. Vince loves those.
Yeah. Yeah. And you couldn't not shoot a dodgeball. Like, that's how it was going to go. You can't plan it. It was fun to watch, actually, all the actual divas go down and be like, oh, this is happening. These they're just, as the team was dwindling, it was like, oh, they're about to get, I think the amateurs or whatever you want to call them only got one person out or only lost one person from their team.
My God.
So it was a complete annihilation in a dodgeball match, which, yada, blah, who cares?
But you have Trish, Molly Holly, Jazz, Gail Kim, Victoria, all legitimate competitors. They must have been thinking, this is silly shit. Why are we here?
Absolutely. On pay-per-view, nonetheless. Like, have your dodgeball thing on Sunday night, whatever. Why? And they even had Earl as the ref.
Earl Hebner.
Yeah, they had the real deal ref, you know. Anyways.
It's pretty brutal. Now, this one I find a lot more humorous, Corey. We've gone over this one before. I actually listened to this episode, by the way. It was how Edge, Christian, and former WWE writer Brian Gewirtz landed themselves in wrestler's court for kissing ass with the writers. So, again, I listened to this on the ENC Pod of Awesomeness. It was a great episode, by the way, and I love how they detail this. But as you can imagine, having any form of a relationship with a writer was generally not accepted backstage, as one would assume. You don't want to be super tight with the head writer. He was the head writer for Raw for many years. I believe he's with 7 Bucks Productions now, with The Rock. Amazing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I get really in hindsight, it does kind of make sense, but the guy's a person too, you know? I don't know how I feel about the situation here. But
so it spiraled out of control thanks to one man, Bob Holly. Do ya? And he witnessed Edge gifting Brian and a Flash action figure. He received at a signing from a fan, and Brian was a huge fan of the Flash, so this was looked upon as an act to get more TV time, which is bizarre because Edge and Christian were one of the best tag teams in the entire company at that point, if not the very best. So maybe they earn more television time based on the fact that they are credible. That's just me.
This could have been going on a while by getting them little gifts all the time, you know?
Now, let me set the stage because it gets even weirder. There was a rumor circulating that Edge and Christian had gone over to Brian's mother's house and they all had a nice dinner together. So the locker room was not happy about this. And then, of course, they get called to wrestler's court. And it was writer Brian Gewurz who had the majority of the heat on him.
Just picture this big, like, Goodfellas scene with Edge and Christian and this writer's mom trying to make them food.
Matzo ball soup. So they're like, just have this soup, okay? Just have a bit of the soup. Sit down. Take your time. Don't worry about it.
Nailed it.
I hope so. That's more my Al Pacino. But either way, Edge said, hoorah! I got a Flash figure. I gave it to Brian because I assumed because he wore the t-shirts. Yeah, naturally, that's a good hint that he was a Flash fan. And I was like, I got this. I don't want it. I like the Flash, but I'm a Thor guy. I'm a Daredevil guy. So I gave it to Brian. Bob Holly saw it. And the next thing you know, we're going to wrestler's court. And then Brian had this to say, yes, he gave me a Flash figure, or you, as they conversed on the show. That's indisputable. The big rumor, though, was that we went to my mother's place in Long Island where I grew up, and we had matzo ball soup. And of course, that never transpired, that they had this big, lavish feast. It could have been delightful, but it never happened.
I do like that matzo ball soup is this lavish feast. I like that.
You can get it from most New York delis, for God's sakes, right?
Oh, yeah. I've had my share. I've never seen it as lavish.
I've never had it before.
WWE locker room.
So either way, Christian said this. Well, we received an anonymous tip from, well, I don't want to say his name here because I don't want to incriminate him. Let's call him Bert Angel. You can put two and two together in terms of who that was. We received a call in between towns, and he was like, you guys, you didn't get this call from me. You're going to wrestler's court tomorrow. We're like, for what? Kissing ass with the writers. And we're like, okay. And Bert Angel said, I just wanted to let you know, but you didn't get this call. I've got to let you go. And then hung up, which is hilarious. And it shows the loyalty of Bert Angel as well, too.
Yeah, good guy, that Bert.
I think so. So Brian sets the stage here. He said, wrestler's court is a time-honored tradition. You hear this terminology utilized very often in the world of pro wrestling, or self-policing, I should say, within the locker room with the entire roster there. Not only the roster, but all the agents and the referees. That's a pressure situation. Pretty much everybody. And I wasn't told that. I was told it's a rite of passage. You get pizza and beer. I literally brought a box of pizza and a six-pack of beer because I thought it would be like this tribunal thing. And it wasn't. There was like five people. We'll discuss the misunderstanding. Everyone will have some pizza and beer. Then we'll be on our merrily way. No, I burst in the door and there's over 100 people in there. Ooh.
I mean, that's an honest mistake because who would assume that everyone you work with would care about this?
So we got tipped off and we discussed it on the drive, what we would do. And then we decided we were going to flip it back on them. It was a little risky, but we decided we were going to go this way. So we decided on making a book because there was a lot of talent that were getting book deals at the time. I think China's at the time was about to come out. We got to the building early. We took a book, or just whatever book, and we took it to Richie Posner, who used to do props and the magic. We didn't tell him what was going on, smarten him up, but they did say, hey, we need this book with a picture of us, and we needed to say, Edge and Christian, how to kiss ass, a road to the top. And Edge said, complete with a picture of us with total shit-eating grins. I love that.
If you're going to get into an argument, get a prop guy to help you out.
There you go. And then, of course, Christian said, so we'd come up with this big speech, that we were going to, you know, talk about how we've been pegged as ass kissers. We weren't going to hide from it. Then we presented this book. There's a lot of ass kissers on the roster, so we'll take the fall for all of them. We kind of just owned up to it. And at the end, we said, a lot of the talent here have been getting book deals. We probably should just tell you so you're not surprised when it comes out. But because of this stuff we've been doing, we received a book deal as well. So obviously they all had this great time. They had a bunch of laughter, but apparently it did not go according to plan for Brian. His portion was not fun at all. A stark contrast to how there's the right way and the wrong way to handle wrestler's court. So out of every story shared up until this point, this is the one that I wish I was actually present for.
Yeah, well, of course, you got props. You got two of the funniest guys in the business, standing up for themselves. It's got to be entertaining. You got 100 people watching this cacophony again, this ridiculousness.
Yeah. What a waste of time, yeah. By the way, too. Like, they could be doing so much more to progress their careers, but they're all sitting there. But at the same time, I get it. It's life on the road. I'm sure it can be pretty boring and tiresome. So they need something to lift them up.
Do we ever get any idea of where these are taking place exactly? I keep trying to place where these are happening.
Well, what do you picture in your mind? I want to hear this.
Like a bathroom or something, but I don't know. I don't know. Can we rent out an office, please? Whatever city we're in, we need to have a big fake kangaroo court situation today.
Could you imagine?
I don't know.
Vince, get
where do you think?
Vince, get out of here. You have to leave. We have wrestler's court. No problem, pal.
Yeah. I have no idea where this would ever happen. Parking lot? I don't know.
It could. I mean, I don't know. I would assume it would take place in either the men's or women's locker room, probably the men's locker room, predominantly because it was made up of men inside wrestler's court. That makes sense to me, but they're not big locker rooms, though.
Exactly. And I picture this big, like, Undertaker wearing, like, the European, the British, like, wigs, the chalk wigs, and this huge thing. But yeah, what is happening?
Walking into the locker room with his illustrious entrance as well, too. Dun, dun,
dun, yeah. Dun, dun, everyone stand.
Please stand for the judge. He is Undertaker. He will take 3 minutes exactly to make it here.
Paul Bearer is the bailiff.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Well, that had to be
version better, by the way.
Yeah, me too.
This one has to be maybe the most petty of all.
Let's read the title, shall we? Let's decide just from the title alone. How the Miz got kicked out of the WWE locker room for accidentally spilling chicken crumbs on Chris Benoit's bags.
Oh my God, come on.
This is about adults, let me remind you. This is real, apparently, by all accounts. And this is stuff they cared about.
By the way, spilling would be the act of like a bowl. Maybe more so dropping would be the operative word here.
Letting
way more accurate.
Letting gravity take hold. Accidentally, also an important word in this title. Accidentally letting gravity take hold of your chicken crumbs inside of maniacal man's bags. Okay, cool. Good. Shall we?
Yes, we shall.
Okay, locker rooms shared backstage are usually crammed with not a lot of space. Early in his career, The Miz had made the mistake of eating fried chicken. What a mistake. And in the process, got some crumbs on Chris Benoit's bag.
Should have been grilled.
Talking to Chris Jericho on Talk Is Jericho podcast, The Miz explained the situation he found himself in. Yeah, I did get kicked out of the locker room. It was a stupid thing by me. Doesn't sound too stupid on his part, to be honest with you.
He's hungry.
I'm sure he's not the only one eating back there. So I'm in the locker room. There's nowhere to really go. You know, there's nowhere to put your stuff down. You would think as a WWE superstar and in the biggest traveling company that we would have amazing, immaculate locker rooms. That couldn't be further from the truth. All of the locker rooms are like cubby holes. So we all have to squeeze in there, and it was one of those small locker rooms. I sat down there and started eating some chicken. And as I'm eating the chicken, someone, Benoit, goes, "Hey, you're spilling chicken all over my bag." Now, in my mind, I wasn't spilling anything because I was still in that mode of, I have to respect everyone. Make sure you don't get anything on anything. And then it kind of escalated to, it got all over everyone's bags.
Oh, come on.
And I thought everyone was joking. I thought it was a joke. So I walked out. I start watching my match back because that's what you do when you're brand new. You watch your match back. Try to figure out what you did wrong and how good you are. When all of a sudden I hear Benoit's aggressive screaming. And I got literally yelled at, worse than I've ever been yelled at in my entire life. I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh my God. I mean, veins were popping out of his neck. He was so angry. I was like, oh man, I'm sorry. I didn't mean it. I was stuttering. I had no idea what to do. I just got up in the WWE. I tried to be as respectful as possible. And the next day, Benoit goes, hey, Miz, you're not going to be kicked out of the locker room, but you just know what you did was terrible. I was like, okay, yep, yes, sir.
Makes sense.
The next day comes by, and he was like, you know what? You're kicked out of the locker room.
Okay.
Yeah, okay, sorry.
Rough night's sleep, obviously.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this all night long. How dare you? I found a crumb at 1 in the morning. Get your stuff out of the locker room, but you're only kicked out on live event days, not on TV days. So I was like, okay, great.
I love the terms and conditions here, by the way. It's like, hey, yeah. can you please sign the contract, Miz? No, I'm going to decline.
There were 98 crumbs, which means only 5 days a week are you out. Had there been 100, this would have been a full weeker. Okay, so the next day I come to TV. I put my stuff in the locker room. Benoit says, Miz, let me talk to you. People have been talking, rumblings, and that. Everyone thinks you should be kicked out of the locker room for TV as well. It's live events. What's happening?
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. This is a lot to deal with here. So I was kicked out of the locker room for like 6 months. It was terrible. It was awful. Why does there need to be a, like, can't you just, I know you don't want to tattle, but really when it comes to, there should be some upper management crumb monitoring situation. He shouldn't have to be kicked out of a locker room for 6 months for that.
Hello, I'm the crumb expert, and I think that he should only deserve 2 weeks banishment, not 6 months.
Exactly. The problem is finding a bathroom backstage that isn't in a locker room. It's very, very difficult. I remember one time I had to go out into the audience in order to go to the bathroom, and I'm using the restroom, and there's a little kid going, I think the Miz is in there. I'm like, this is the lowest of the lows of my career right now. You hope that would happen, right? How many times have we both gone to wrestling combined?
Oh, you just go to
the washroom and one of the main guys is taking a pee out of there? That'd be incredible.
That'd be so bizarre. Like, Macho Man is in the... What happened to him?
You spilling crumbs, kid.
Andre did not want me in there for only baby oil.
Yeah, exactly. When you grow up, don't spill crumbs in your coworkers' bags.
That was incredibly extreme. I understand that it was quote unquote disrespectful, but to warrant a 6 month banishment, absolutely not.
It warranted a hey man, don't do that. That's what it warranted.
Yeah. Yeah. It's basically just here, but also here's where it's very inconsistent. So Chris Benoit is going to help guide Matt Stryker, but he's going to bury The Miz, probably because he came from MTV. That's my assumption.
Oh, yeah. Everyone had it out for him right off the hop just because of that. But even with the Stryker story, that help seemed pretty, I don't know, like he's grasping at straws for anyone who's kind of good. So
no kidding.
I don't know. You know how hard life is? This is stuff people actually care about. This is absurd.
Yeah. Like chicken crumbs. Okay.
Life is extremely hard. Like people are dying. Who cares? Just move on.
Corey, I get crumbs on the couch all the time. I'm not banished from my house.
I mean, yeah, I've gotten crumbs in the bed before and, listen, I'm not going to go into what happened after that, but
eating in the bed. Okay.
Yeah. People treat things differently. Let's just put it that way.
Sure. And we move ahead to Muhammad Hassan. There's a name you don't hear very often. He was in Wrestler's Court for a $2,000 bar tab and Eddie Guerrero incident. He had really a short but memorable tenure in WWE. In the space of about 7 months, he worked with Hulk Hogan, that was at WrestleMania, John Cena, The Undertaker, Mick Foley, Batista, Jerry Lawler, Sergeant Slaughter. So obviously jealousy is going to run amok because here's this kid who I believe was 23, 24 years old at the time who's getting this great push, right?
Yeah, I mean, look at that. That's insane. That's an impressive little roster. And really, this story's, I can deal with this story.
Yeah, and I feel horrible for Muhammad Hassan because his character was immediately dropped in 2005. That was following an ill-timed segment that took place after the London bombings. And he shouldn't be blamed for it whatsoever. It's the producers. right? They're the ones that edit the show because I believe it aired on SmackDown UPN, but he took the fall. So at the time, I believe he's only 24 and kicked out the door. Tried to bring him back. It didn't work. And as you can imagine, too, jealousy was running amok based on this immediate push. Now, it was Kurt Angle who I believe was joking around. He encouraged Muhammad Hassan to address Eddie Guerrero about removing the camel clutch from his arsenal as it was Hassan's finisher. Now, contrary to popular belief, Muhammad Hassan here says that Eddie and him were very cool about it, but they had a respectful conversation. Now, really what transpired was that Muhammad Hassan did not know that Eddie Guerrero's father, Gory Guerrero, created the camel clutch. And as a result, Eddie kept using the move. So really, to paint this picture, it was probably Kurt Angle that was like, hey, you should tell Eddie Guerrero to stop using the move. And he has no idea, oh, Eddie's father actually invented the friggin' move. So he has all the right to use it.
Right.
So he didn't know any better, right? So he's completely oblivious. And he's also new to the business, but apparently they hugged it out. But now he had an infamous $2,000 bar tab to pay. So here's what he had to say. This was on Why It Ended, Robbie E's podcast. I believe he's Robert Stone now in NXT. Obviously, I would never disrespect Eddie Guerrero. Eddie Guerrero was one of the guys I looked up to because Eddie and Chris Benoit at the time were two guys small in stature that were at the top of the card because of their talent and because of their ability. Absolutely true. You know, I don't think Kurt meant anything by it at all. So I think Kurt was also a top guy who at the time was inexperienced, which I'm going to interrupt for a second. Kurt Angle at that time would have been involved in the business for 5 years. How is that inexperienced?
Yeah. And never mind his prior before entering.
Yeah, multiple time champion. Either way, and Eddie definitely did not want to take it the way that everybody else did. I think it was just sort of a torch that everybody could grab upon and say, look, this kid is an awful human being. I don't know if anybody else felt that way at the time, though, as I had plenty of guys who had my back. So
it does sound like a lot of these guys are grasping at straws, like, how can I get this guy for something?
It's one word. It's boredom. That's what it is.
Yeah, exactly. Monotony. Yeah, exactly.
And at the time, it's a $2,000 bar tab. And here's what he said. I mean, that's a great story, but it is what it is. I'm sure I'm not the only one who's paid a bar tab at the expense of other WWE guys. Was I treated fairly? Would it be different these days? Who knows for sure? Now, I ask you, Corey, would it be different these days? I would argue, absolutely. It's a very different locker room now that they would never really thrust this upon them to say, pay a $2,000 bar tab because you disrespected one of our guys.
Yeah, I mean, I Seth Rollins said, I guess, recently that it's kind of an antiquated system, the wrestler's court. Who knows? I mean, but you kind of long for the days where you're paying for your buddy's bar tabs in wrestling. You love picturing all those guys going to the bar. And really, in the end, this kind of sounds like a bit of an easy, even though he didn't deserve any of it.
No.
Comparatively, versus a six-month shunning.
No kidding.
A $2,000 bar tab where it's actually just gone, then I'd take that.
Me too.
For all your pals and everyone's jolly and happy and drinking. Enjoy.
If The Miz had a dotted line and Chris Benoit said, listen, $2,000, this problem goes away, The Miz probably would have said, how do I send the check out to? Who is it for? Mr. Benoit, Mr. McMahon, Undertaker, whoever, I will sign that.
Exactly.
Muhammad Hassan continues, even the wrestler's court, I always felt like it was unjust. Of course, he agrees as well. I never felt like it was a serious, you know, these guys think I was disrespecting Eddie Guerrero, but Eddie never took it that way. It was everybody else who, to be honest, might have gone overboard, and they were bored in general, on another trip to Japan, and they kind of took it and ran with it. Just as we noted, they're probably bored on a trip, and they think, let's create something out of nothing.
Right, yeah. I mean, we're all in quarantine right now. We kind of get that.
Yeah, we get antsy. It's natural, right? I mean, we can't all watch the Tiger King or find ourselves satisfied and entertained.
See the argument I had with my pillow earlier.
And here's what he said. Even then, I never took it seriously. I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. I just don't think the guys like The Undertaker and Triple H and Shawn ever really thought that I went up to Eddie and slapped him in the face like that. So, again, that's how it's, you know, telegram, tele-wrestler, all of that that you hear about. He went up and slapped Eddie Guerrero? Why would he ever do that? That's bizarre.
I'll bet those three guys specifically never even gave this a second thought, really.
No, they're probably like, this is silly.
Yeah, there's the guys that have the reputation of being the bozos in the back, and they're probably running with it, and yada, yada, yada.
So as he noted as well, too, that people just took this story, they ran with it, and he had no idea. Again, he was completely oblivious to the fact that Gory Guerrero, Eddie's father, invented the move. He was just thinking, it's my move. I have no idea who invented it. It's part of my character, part of my gimmick. And it just tells you the experience I had at the time. He was 24. And in this interview, he said, I'll be 38 next month. I look back and I was definitely a kid. And of course, yeah, at 24, you're a kid, especially so new to the business. He did not know what he was doing or what he was getting into. And he did say, I wish I could say this now. I believe he might be a principal for a high school or at least a public school. That at the time, a $2,000 bar tab didn't really hurt me too much. I honestly felt like I needed some redemption. I'm not kidding. I felt horrible. I mean, that's Eddie's father, and here I am disrespecting a legend like Eddie. So basically, he was questioning, is this even a fair amount? I don't know, but I needed redemption because I was a gigantic ass for doing it.
Look how nice this guy sounds. This guy sounds like a great guy, really.
No, he does. I mean, he took it like a champ, because if it was me or you, I'd be a little bit bitter about the fact that I spent $2,000 that could have went into my bank account paying for a bar tab because of something that I was a little bit oblivious about, but also was completely and utterly blown out of proportion.
Yeah, playing stupid and oblivion and all that, these are genuine arguments that should be allowed. You're oblivious to that fact. That's it. Done.
Well, I mean,
this is over.
Were any of these even debatable? For the most part, any of these, like, you put them in court and you say, you've absolutely done this. Like, it'd be different if you went up and you slapped somebody or you said something obscene, then maybe it is valid to end up in wrestler's court.
I don't know, that dodgeball game. They were asking for it.
Jeez. Now, you mentioned Seth Rollins. Xavier Woods in 2018, it may have changed. He noted wrestler's court still exists. A lot of the time it's when somebody steals your move, you bring them to wrestler's court.
Okay. When you steal their move, like in the middle of a match?
Not even that, but let's say, for example, I'm in NXT and I use a finisher that somebody on the main roster, and I know they don't say main roster, but different eyes, Raw and SmackDown, are utilizing, right? And I'm using that and I did not ask for permission from that individual or the office. That could be deemed as me stealing the move.
People care about a lot of stuff, eh? That you just don't care about in life normally.
Well, that's, they're all about protecting their finishers. I do understand that, but does it warrant the wrestler's court? No, yeah. I mean, it could be a phone call. Chris Benoit famously told Chris Jericho, rather, famously told a story recently with the Revolt, formerly the Revival, noting, "Hey, you took the Shatter Machine. It was kind of like, you know, the one move that I had, the Codebreaker." And I wasn't cool about it. I was a little bit pissed off, but they talked it out. They were fine. That was it. No wrestler's court.
Talking it out? Whoa. What is that?
A foreign concept. By the way, Corey, I would imagine there could be wrestler's court part two for another article or episode. Now, here's some of the few that were not included, by the way. Melina being called out for being unprofessional backstage. Her behavior was just deemed not professional. And nearly getting into a fight with Queen Charmel. How dare you?
Do you know any history behind that? Did Melina have a history of being unprofessional?
From what I understand, she was involved, I'm not going to get into it, several wrestlers backstage.
Okay.
And was very egotistical. That's at least what I have read.
Okay.
And then there was Sean Daivari, accused of disrespecting veterans such as Shawn Michaels. Chris Benoit forced him to do 1,000 squats as punishment. Now, part of that, too, is I believe he showed up the next day. I think Benoit actually did those squats with him. Testament to him. I'll give him credit for that. But the next day, he said, how are you feeling?
More pressure.
How you feeling? I'm sore. 500 more. What?
Why would you even listen to that? That's insanity.
And then there's this one. This one is really odd, and I would love to do a deep dive in terms of Raven in general, but being banned from even speaking in the locker room.
I can't even picture that. I can't picture that. Imagine being a locker room full of people and being like, everyone watch, make sure this guy doesn't say anything.
Hello, did you speak? Damn it, did you speak?
100 days more. What are people talking about?
And here's another one. And Kane is apparently the gentle giant. I've heard nobody speak ill about Glenn Jacobs. The Hardys stole Kane's first class seat after manager Michael Hayes suggested they join him. So that's on Michael Hayes, not the Hardys.
Most things are, yeah.
Yeah. So, of course, you know, why were you thinking that you're better than us, flying first class, stealing Kane's seat? And apparently Kane said, whatever. But, you know, the Hardys got off easy in that one where they just bought him dinner. That was it.
Yeah. Yes, please. Come on. I've heard of one. Your man, Y2J.
Yes.
And Goldberg. You know that one? Where Goldberg's like, Goldberg was talking a lot of trash about him in WCW. Then he went to WWE and told Kevin Nash that Chris Jericho wasn't, you know, worth fighting, and he didn't want to fight him and all this stuff. And that got back to Jericho, and they got into a real fight.
They did. Front face lock. He got him to the ground. In fact, I believe Vince really respected Chris Jericho after that, and I would too.
That's pretty impressive. The guy's a huge guy. And then that went to wrestler's court as well, and Goldberg had to tell everyone that Jericho's better than him. Which, that might be the worst punishment of all.
Yeah, that's up there, even though it is factual.
Yeah, obviously. And then Johnny from the cheer squad kind of being a little miserable about his gimmick that he worked towards his whole life.
Hard to blame him, though, right?
Yeah, no, of course. My God.
You're going to be a cheerleader. You're going to be a male cheerleader, but we're going to send you to the top. You're going to feud with DX. How do you feel about that? Not great.
He might have been right. Where is he now? He was probably right to be a little upset about that. Teddy Long selling Viagra in the back. Have you heard of that one?
I don't even know if I've heard that one.
Yeah, and he had Mae Young as his barrister.
Sweet Jesus.
Yeah, there's a lot of those back there. I mean, if it's still going on, I look forward to hearing what all the new absolute bullshit trash is in the future.
If there's enough demand, we will dive into Wrestler's Court Part 2, but I will need more than two beers for that.
Yeah, my stiff drink is done. And you know what? I just want to take this time to challenge Zarka to a little wrestler's court. Gonna get Dink the Clown as my barrister. He can do whatever he wants, but he's going down, and he's gonna not be able to talk on the podcast. He's gonna do 19 squats, and and he's gonna have to pee in the closet.
That's God! I'll gladly be the judge for this one.
Wear your wig, buddy.
I will. I'll have it on demand. Sitting nearby. Perfect. So this concludes yet another episode of the Pro Wrestling Stories podcast. I hope you had a stiff drink or at least a craft beer as you joined us. Sincerely hope that you join us for future episodes, by the way, as we dive deep into the archives to bring you more of these articles to life in audio form. It's that nostalgic trip that we talk about. Listen and subscribe to future episodes wherever you get them. Apple, Spotify, YouTube, you name it. Follow Pro Wrestling Stories on Facebook at Pro Wrestling Stories and on Twitter, PWS_official. Plus, Corey, if you need a t-shirt, PWSTees.com. That's the location. 10% off if you use the promo code podcast. Podcast. That's it. Leave us a review, too. You leave us a review, you will actually enter to win a t-shirt on PWSTees.
We will do as many squats as your star rating gives. So a 10 star, we'll do 10 squats, being you.
My gazelle legs can't take it.
100 stars, you can do it. Just let's make them do it. You don't want to leave a 1 star, because that's just going to the bathroom. You want us to 100 stars, everybody.
Oh my God. From Chris Toplak and Corey Rivard, happy drills to you until we meet again.